Stop. Before you consider taking drastic measures to lose weight, like GLP-1 injections, consider Golo. Golo's release is easier than injections and fad diets. No need to jump through insurance hoops. It's simple. You take one release supplement with each meal. Golo's release supplement contains 7 natural plants and 3 key minerals that target body fat and combat the stress of dieting. With Golo, you follow the Golo for Life plan, where you'll safely and effectively control sugar cravings and hunger while minimizing muscle loss, allowing you to feel good and inspired to reach your goal weight. With Golo, you get an effective and affordable weight loss solution that's clinically proven. Because controlling glucose, maintaining healthy insulin levels, and saying goodbye to starvation dieting is the secret to lasting weight loss and wellness. Visit Golo.com to get started today. That's Golo.com. Go to Golo.com to join the 5 million people who have switched to Golo as a better way to lose weight. Visit Golo.com today.
What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated staff writer Rohan Nadkarni. Quick thanks to our colleague, John Gonzalez, for guest hosting last week's second show while I was on a pre-playoffs vacation. And Rohan, you were also out of town. On today's episode, we'll be opening up the mailbag to answer a whole bunch of questions. But first, a quick reminder to our listeners to please keep those emails coming, openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Rohan, we are not short on news this morning, and there are a million different directions we can go to start today's show, but allow me to kick things off with a quick word of advice to you, my friend. Remember, at your highest moment, be careful. That's when the devil comes for you.
You'll notice that I've never made any disparaging remarks about Michael's wife on this show. Listen, man, I was having a fantastic weekend, just so completely divorced from everything that was happening in the news. I was in El Salvador for a wedding. Shout out to Paolo Ughetti, who got married. Our listeners may remember him. He did an episode of Open Floor with me. He's now covering college football for ESPN. Had such a fantastic time. Just absolutely sweating my ass off in a linen suit. I'd never been more sweaty in my life than I was these last 3 days, but I had no idea. I come back on Sunday, I text you, I'm like, Mike, Chris Paul came back, I didn't even know about that. And I'm like, oh, what's happening in America today? The Oscars are tonight. I'm not joking. And I was going to tell you this last night, but I was like, I'm going to save it for the pod. I was not going to watch. Like, I had not seen most of the movies this year. I had no intention of watching. And I was like, you know why I'm going to watch? Because everyone says tonight is the night Will Smith is going to win his first Oscar.
That's all the only reason I watched, too. Literally the only reason.
And he gave us everything we could have asked for and more.
Truly, you know, there's a lot of takes out there about the most famous slap probably in the history of the world, would you say? Probably.
Yeah.
My take is that it was hilarious. I do not condone violence at all. But in the context of just one super famous person slapping another super famous person on national television, it's just like, you know, it's just hilarious. It's a hilarious television moment. It was iconic. It was shocking. We don't need to get too serious with it.
We don't need to get too serious. Let me just say this. This was, considering some of the things that happened in this country over the last, let's say, 6 years or so.
Yeah, let's boil it down to six.
Last night was the first time I'd been genuinely shocked, like truly shocked at what I was watching in a very long time. Like we kind of live in a time where all norms are broken, you know. People in positions of power can say or do whatever they want. Last night was the first time I was really shocked at what I was watching. Like, I think I'm still processing it. I'm with you. It was mostly funny. Like, at the end of the day, these are two very rich people just getting upset over something that's really trivial at the end of the day. I don't think the slap could have killed him, like some of our thought leaders have posited. Yeah.
As Rudy Gay tweeted, he didn't even rub his face, which...
Bro, you know incredible. He wanted to rub his face.
Oh my goodness.
The way Chris Rock ate that slap was... To bring it back to basketball, Isaiah Stewart is not eating that slap like that. Shout out to Beef Stew. Chris Rock, he continued with the... He still presented. How do you present after that? I mean, he could barely get the words out, but what a... I'm going to read... I'm not interested in any takes, but I can't wait to read all like the accounts of it. I'm really excited to read what everyone who was in the room has to say about what happened. But yeah, what a... the fact that we're talking about it on this basketball podcast and the fact that you and I both just knew that we could not avoid it just goes to show how... just absolutely shocking of a moment it was.
Mind blowing. Yeah. And but you know, the quote that I I delivered at the top to you, at your highest moment, be careful, that's when the devil comes for you. One of the coolest things ever uttered. It was Denzel Washington said that to Will Smith, during a commercial break after the slap occurred. And I'm going to try to tie that quote into basketball real quick. Yesterday, Sunday, the Boston Celtics jumped into first place for the first time all season after once being 23-24, a remarkable turnaround. You could say that it was their highest moment. And then... today we learn that Rob Williams has torn his meniscus. The devil has come for the Boston Celtics. I do not know how they are going to recover from this. There's a lot of different... we can get into the minutiae for a few minutes here about what they'll look like if they still have a shot. There's also the chance that Rob comes back at some point if they, you know, go to the conference finals or something like that. Who knows right now? It's too early to say. We're recording before we know a timetable. But... I broke this news to you right before we started recording.
You did.
So what's your snap reaction to the Celtics? I guess they're going to be playing Daniel Tice a lot. Like, it's sad. It's really sad.
It's a bummer, man. When you told me, I really couldn't believe it. I saw last night that Ime Udoka said something like he rolled the knee pretty bad, and I thought it was going to be a sprain or something along those lines. I didn't even think to check this morning, is there an update on Rob Williams? I just assumed he's going to be fine. Maybe he'll miss the rest of the regular season at most. My first instinct in these scenarios is always, what are the chances he can get back on the floor? Like, how can they push it? I will say, there's a history of people not getting surgery on the meniscus. And, you know, sometimes it's like a 3-week injury. Sometimes it's like Lonzo Ball and they're out for a long time. Obviously, you said we're recording right now. We don't know the timetable. I'm holding out hope that somehow it's one of those meniscus that's just on the shorter end. They don't need to go in with the surgery. They don't need to do the full repair, etc. Sometimes those players are able to come back within a matter of weeks. And that's what I hope it is for Rob Williams. When you mentioned it, I wrote about this. We're going to talk a lot about the Eastern Conference today and a lot about the statements we've made in the past about certain teams. But I wrote about this when I ranked the Eastern Conference contenders. I put Boston at number 2. And I was like, honestly, the only thing that worries about me is I feel like they have 7 great players, 7 guys. There's no holes in that rotation, none. It's airtight. The only issue is what happens if they have to play Tice a little bit more than they wanted to in the playoffs. And now it's looking like, who are their other big men? It's Luke Kornet. I think they signed in the wake of the trade deadline. They can play small. They do have the opportunity to put Derek White in the starting lineup and just kind of, but now you're playing Jaylen Brown at the 4. For probably that entire playoff run. And you still have the problem of, there's going to be game 6s and game 7s where maybe you're playing a 6-man rotation, but you can't do that starting from the first round. You're going to need at least 8 guys. I don't know who guy, Peyton Pritchard's had good minutes during this run, but I wrote about this in that piece, Mike, and we even talked about it on the pod. Like, they have one of the best lineups of the last 10 years. Their lineup they've had of Smart, Tatum, Brown, Rob, and Horford is better than any lineup the Warriors have had with Durant.
Yeah.
It's been that dominant. It's
It's a great starting five. They've been able to, I've seen some criticisms of what that starting five would look like in the playoffs, where maybe there's, you know, if you're switching everything, just is Horford a weak point? Is Rob Williams on the perimeter a weak point? I don't really buy into that. I
don't know where that comes from, because if you watch the games, I mean, I've seen Horford switch onto guards all year long and do a good
absolutely.
Job.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But to speak to Rob's absence, you know, I think they're really going to be leaning hard on Grant Williams. You know, you mentioned Derek White. Are you going to, you know, I would assume they're going to start Grant Williams.
I mean, Grant's played well this year.
He's played well, guarded Karl Anthony Towns. Sunday got obliterated by Karl Anthony Towns, but many people who are 6'6 or however tall Grant Williams is do get obliterated by Karl Anthony Towns. So size is an issue now for sure. If you face off against the Bucks or the Sixers, having Rob Williams is pretty important against Giannis Antetokounmpo and Joel Embiid.
The Bucks were already the team that I was the most scared of for Boston. And that's not because of anything Boston has done. It's only because Giannis is the mismatch problem for everyone in the East. He's everyone in the NBA, for that matter. And Boston had – that was the thing. It's like Rob and Horford, as far as two guys to throw at Giannis, it's hard to get better than that. And now it's – the thing is, the East is so crazy right now. Theoretically, they could somehow avoid Milwaukee – you know, we don't know how the seeding's going to shake out. They could somehow avoid Milwaukee until the conference finals, maybe avoid Milwaukee altogether, and then they're in better shape. But yeah, it's that's a bummer, man. I can't really believe it.
Yeah, it stinks. it stinks a lot. So initially, when I sent you our outline, the team that we were going to talk about and we're about to dive into is the Miami Heat. The devil has also come for the Miami Heat. They are currently, we're recording this on Monday. Tonight they play the Sacramento Kings in Miami.
The Kings don't have De'Aaron Fox and DeMontis Sabonis, which, in my opinion, makes Sacramento the favorite tonight.
That's really, yes, exactly.
That's been the secret to beating the Heat all year, is just sit your best players.
So after a nightmarish four-game slide that included losses against the Sixers without James Harden and Joel Embiid, the Warriors without Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and Klay Thompson, the Knicks without Julius Randle, and the Nets had everybody, I was at that game. It was fun. The Nets at one point led by 37 points and the Heat, they were playing on the second night of a back-to-back, but we're at full strength. Jimmy Butler was questionable coming in. Tyler Herro was questionable coming in. Everybody played.
Did Gabe Vincent play?
Gabe Vincent did not play your point. Yeah. Okay. Yes. I apologize. Gabe Vincent was absent. Eric Spoelstra was also absent, tending to a medical procedure that his son is having. So hopefully everyone is okay.
They're missing one of the best backup point guards in the league and a top 15 coach of all time. So I think full strength is generous. But.
Fair enough. Okay. So, but the point stands that you would think that we haven't even mentioned the meltdown where Eric Spoelstra threw his clipboard at Jimmy Butler. And that was one of those moments that I know John Gonzalez spoke about it on last week's episode that neither you or I was a part of. But to touch on that for 2 seconds, that's one of those things that doesn't just happen in one game because of one argument. It was like one of those slow build eruptions, similar to how people were going back and looking at some of the jokes that Chris Rock was telling back in 2016 about Jada. It's a slow build up type of deal. And crescendo.
I don't even think it was a slow build up. I think that they were frustrated after that Philly game. That Golden State had just gone on a huge run, and I think that that was enough. Those 6 quarters, I think, were enough.
Okay, so on a scale of 1 to 10 right now, Rohan, just like how concerning is this to you with Miami? Miami is now in second place, but it's basically like a four-way tie between the Celtics, the Bucks, the Sixers, and the Heat. We don't know how things are going to shake out, but the Heat's schedule upcoming is not easy after Sacramento. They play Boston, Rob Williams-less Boston on Wednesday, and then things get a little tougher from there, or as tough from there. So just what's the level of concern right now for Miami, in your opinion?
I mean, the concern has to be a 10. I'm not worried about the fight.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the concern has to be a 10. I'm not even worried about the fight. I mean, I think that that's the I hesitate to use the phrase culture with the Heat because it connotates one thing, but at the
end
of the day...
Can I just say real quick? So I attended the game on Saturday against the Nets with my wife, Callie, and we're walking around the concourse, and there's all these T-shirts that say culture, and I had to explain to her what Heat culture was, and
she became a fan right then and there.
She was flabbergasted, as a smart person is when they see that, and she was wondering why.
Let's not
talk
about
other cultures that are positive around the league. I was like, yes, there are. There are other great cultures. It's strange.
Let's not talk about Miami propaganda versus Boston propaganda. We don't need to get into all that right now. But
okay, continue.
As far as the fight goes, you know, that's the kind of the style they've cultivated there. I remember Duncan Robinson telling you that's what Jimmy Butler was like literally from his first practice in Miami, and you know, they made it to a finals with him being that kind of person, so I'm not really worried about that. But we touched on this briefly in our group chat, Mike, but I told you months ago on this pod, I remember I brought it up, like I thought this was a great regular season team, but I'm not high on them for their playoff chances. I wrote about this. I ranked them behind Milwaukee, Boston, Philly, and Brooklyn for their title chances because I didn't have faith and what they could do in the half court. And we saw it in that Philly game, especially late. You know, Philly, without Harden and Embiid, attacked Tyler Hero. Tyrese Maxey, Tobias Harris were just crushing Hero down the stretch. And on the other end of the floor, the Heat didn't know what they wanted to do. They didn't, you know, they were like, do we want to attack with Jimmy on switches? Do we want Tyler to run pick and rolls? Do we want Kyle Lowry to run pick and rolls? To me, the concern's a 10 because, A, they have no idea what they want to do in close games. They don't have a closing lineup. The Hero, Butler, Lowry, Tucker, Adebayo group, I think is probably, I haven't looked up the lineup stats in a few days, but you know, it's still under 100 minutes for the season. There's no reason that group shouldn't have played more by now. Even with all the injuries they've had, they've been available in enough games that for some reason that lineup doesn't get a ton of use. They don't know what plays they want to run down the stretch. Think about every other team in the East. It's Harden and Embiid pick and roll. It's Giannis Middleton pick and roll or Giannis post up. It's let's get Tatum a switch on a smaller defender. I feel like every other team in the East knows what they want to do in the last few minutes of a close game. The Heat still have no idea. And now you add on top of that, their defense is sliding. Teams are basically just, they're doing a good job of getting rid of Bam Adebayo down the stretch because they know the Heat want to switch. And that to an extent is kind of mitigating what Bam wants to do. They're just targeting, they always kind of have a weak defender on the floor, whether it's Duncan Robinson or Tyler Hero, and they need those guys because their half-court offense doesn't work. And the idea was bringing in someone like Kyle Lowry, you'd have four defenders on the floor, you can cover for that fifth guy. I'm not sure that's been the case. I mean, I think the concern's a 10. I don't know how you can say it's anything not. The crazy thing is, like, they still have a chance to finish with the number one seed. That's not impossible, but I mean, to not have the competitive spirit to come back after that Philly game and beat a shorthanded Warriors team on the second night of a back-to-back, you're at home. And then to follow that up, blowing that hugely to the Knicks, I understand Emmanuel quickly, he's banking in threes, they're hitting all kinds of crazy shots. But yeah, I don't know how the concern is anything less than a 10 because throw out the fight, maybe even throw out one or two of these. You throw out the Nets loss. Okay, the Nets were, you know, full strength and you're on the second night of a back-to-back. Okay, throw out the Philly loss. You know, you didn't get up for that game. That doesn't change, I think, the structural issues they have. You know, maybe they can make it to the second round, but if we're talking pure title odds, yeah, I think the concern has to be is at a 10. And this is a team that's built to win now.
I'm a little less concerned. I'm trying not to be a prisoner of the moment. I'm probably, if I had to grade it out, I would say like a 7 or an 8. I still think that if the bracket shakes out in a way that's favorable to them, where they can avoid Brooklyn in round one. Maybe they catch Chicago in round one, and then a banged up Celtics in round. Like, you never. It's just like the matchups and how the standings kind of filter out. I still think that there's hope for this team to get to the finals. You hit on the major, look, the major concern is their offense, right? Like, when they went to the finals as a five seed in 2020, their half court offense, I think, was like third best in the NBA. Like, they were really good in a critical area that kind of forecast success in the postseason. They're not good in the half court.
Not at all.
Offensively this season. And there is this confusing inability to kind of identify the right identity offensively, as you were saying. Like, what do they do down the stretch? Why isn't Bam Adebayo more of a focus offensively?
That's a big issue.
And I was like, when are they going to run a dribble handoff with Duncan Robinson and Bam Adebayo? Like, when is that going to happen? I was sitting there just like, When is that going to happen? And it just didn't.
It's a weird thing that they seem to run like their first five times out of the gate. Like, okay, let's go Bam, Duncan, dribble handoff, you know, right off the tip. And then second quarter, you don't see it. Third quarter, fourth quarter, Duncan doesn't even play. The Bam thing is strange. He's not a focal point. He should have the ball in his hands down the stretch of a close game. I think at the end of the day, he's kind of their best advantage against most big men in the league. The problem is he also does not have the full offensive polish yet that I think some of us have expected. The jumper is inconsistent. I mean, he's been great in transition. He's great when the team's playing with, I think, a little bit of pace, like with those bench lineups when he plays with more shooting. I think is when he really thrives. The problem is that I think they play with the second or third slowest pace in the league. I think that also hurts Bam a bit, but
pace is problematic for this team. Yeah. I really think it is. Like, they've been really good and effective and efficient in transition when they get out there, but they don't do it enough, and they take so many shots late in the shot clock. And when you watch them, like they pass it a ton, they share the ball. But it's not north-south. It's just moving the ball side to side, and then no one attacks. The ball doesn't touch the paint. Jimmy's isolating a lot more this season than basically he ever has in his career.
Yeah, and he's not terrible in those situations, but it's not like he's so good that it's you're comfortable with it as kind of your go-to action.
Right, and I don't know. I just... There's so many theoretical avenues to success when I look at the roster. Like, their big three, Lowry, Butler, and Bam, are fascinating because they inherently complement each other positionally, but also, like, they can run, like, inverted pick and rolls. They can run traditional pick and rolls. They can do so many things, and it's just when you look at the numbers, none of it is successful. None of it is efficient. And I don't know in the playoffs what all that looks like. And can this all turn around? And I mean, this team is such a great 3-point shooting team. They generate a ton of corner threes. They make corner threes basically more accurate. They're more accurate from the corners than I think every team in the league. Like, does that, I mean, I don't know. Like, is it a crutch that it will just make them even worse in the playoffs?
I kind of think it is. I mean, they were top 10 in offense for most of the season. They've since slipped out of the top 10. To me, it's not a coincidence that the more they've gotten healthy and the more Butler and Bam have played together, kind of the hit their offense has taken. I mean, so much of their success in December and January was guys like Caleb Martin, Max Strus, Tyler Herro, Duncan getting hot from three. The problem is when the team is fully healthy, those guys have diminished roles. Like, the 3-point shooting gets worse the healthier the team gets, the more their better players play. Mm-hmm. And then you get to the issue with you can try to play them more in the playoffs, but Herro, Strus, and Robinson have all shown to be kind of these defensive liabilities on differing levels. And the degree to which they rely on Tyler Herro is so dangerous to me. I mean, to his credit, I mean, I feel like I go back and forth on being super skeptical of him and high on him in our group chat, which is like also a lot of just trash talking in general. So that's part of the issue. But the degree to which they rely on him, I just don't know if it's sustainable. He's had some really, really good games since the All-Star break. And like I said, to his credit, he improved greatly from last season. I'm not trying to take away anything from what he's done. Mm-hmm. But the team just put it in a position where I just think they're over-reliant on him to be kind of their half-court creator, their spark plug. And I just think he's going to get eaten alive in the playoffs against teams like Brooklyn or Boston that have a wing scorer who can just try to call him up in a switch on every possession.
It's going to be fascinating. At the end of the Sixers game, when they went on that 16-2 run, they repeatedly attacked Tyrese Maxey, Shake Milton, repeatedly attacked Hero on an island. Obviously, everyone talks about the 2020 finals when LeBron called up Duncan and called up Hero and attacked them in ball screens over and over and over again for the entirety of that series, really.
I mean, it felt like they did a better job then. I mean, I wonder if they'll go back to that. They kind of did a hedge and recover. It just puts a lot of pressure on your defense. And I think for what it's worth, they did a decent job, as decent as you could really do in that series. You know, it's just not going to work against teams that are really great at shooting. You know, that Lakers team was kind of up and down shooting-wise, but...
I also had LeBron.
Yeah.
LeBron is picking you apart that way. It's tough. Not every team has that. But it'll be fascinating. I mean, Bam had the quote the other night, guard your yard. That's kind of the mantra there, or needs to be. They switch a lot, but I mean, in the playoffs, we'll see if they switch as much as they have during the regular season, honestly. Their defense has just been putrid throughout the past week and a half.
I think that's honestly got to be – that's why my concerns are at a 10, because it's one thing if they're losing these games because the half-court offense, which has been the issue all year long, is failing them, right? It's like, okay, I have identified the problem and can work on solutions. But when your defense, which is kind of your calling card, also goes, your rebounding's gotten terrible. Like, now what? Now what are you going to do? Because now you have too many holes to plug as opposed to just one.
Yep. So you're a 10 out of 10 on the concern meter. Yeah. I wasn't anticipating it to be that high. If they, for whatever reason, get blown out by the Kings tonight, I might join you, but this feels like a good time to bounce back, get a necessary win. And then, look, if you beat the Celtics on Wednesday, everything is rosy, right? Like, then you can kind of build off of that as well. So we'll see with Miami.
If they beat the Celtics on Wednesday, cocky Heat fan is back on next Monday's spot.
Okay, I believe it. No, yeah. as you should be. Yeah. All right, let's open up the mailbag. Rohan, we have this a message from Kennard, not Luke Kennard. Kennard is the first name of this listener, who writes in, with all the rumors circulating about Quinn Snyder's imminent departure from the Utah Jazz for greener pastures such as L.A. or New York because of his unmatched coaching acumen, my question is this. How come the Jazz seem to lose every game that is close in the fourth quarter, given that they have two superstars and a loaded roster? It's getting exponentially harder to watch Jazz games. Love the pod. Thank you, Kennard. Appreciate that question. We should start by saying that there are rumors out there that the Lakers are interested in Quinn Snyder. Snyder addressed them, characterizing the rumors as, quote, disrespectful last week. We should also say that Utah's crunch time offense is fine. Ninth on the season, 10th since the All-Star break. They have one of the greatest offenses of all time. Again, all their advanced metrics are great. Quinn Snyder's an unbelievable coach. I don't think this needs to be argued. I will just say, like, the two superstar thing is like, Donovan Mitchell is amazing. He's an amazing offensive player. Rudy Gay is he's a perennial defensive player of the year candidate, front runner.
Just say it, Mike.
Well, it's just like, you know, he can't create his own shot. So yeah, like when
he's
you
not
get
a superstar. He's not a superstar. Can we just go back to when you and I ranked our top 10 duos before the season, and I put Chris Paul and Devin Booker above Rudy Gay and Donovan Mitchell? I don't remember if it was on that pod or a different one where you said, would you rather have Chris Paul and Devin Booker than Rudy Gay and Donovan Mitchell in a playoff series?
Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert.
Sorry. What am I saying?
Rudy Gay.
Rudy Gay. Sorry. Rudy Gobert. And I had a long pause, and you were like, oh, remember that pause? That pause was because I didn't want to just fully go in on Gobert. But down the stretch of a game, I'd rather have two players who can be impactful with the ball in their hands as opposed to Gobert, who's elite at what he does, right? He's an elite role player in a pick-and-roll scheme. There's no doubt about that. There's just a limit to how effective someone like that can be when they are not effective with the ball in their hands. Even think about like DeAndre Ayton, right? I mean, he can pull up and take that little mid-range shot. He's elite in the short roll. He does all these things outside of just catching lobs and dunking. I'm not saying that's all Rudy Gobert does. Yes,
he has
I'm not
touch.
Saying exactly. I'm not saying that that's all Rudy Gobert does, but he doesn't have the touch of someone like Ayton, for example. So, yeah, I don't think that I would say they have two superstars offensively, at least down the stretch, and that makes it a little bit trickier for them. But like you said, they still have really good offense. And so I think for them, it's also going to come down to they're playing pick and roll. Teams are limited in what they can do to defend it unless they're switching everything. It's going to come down to are the role players hitting their shots that are generated from those looks. And some nights they're going to go in, some nights they're not.
Yeah, I think that several defenses have had a lot of success switching all ball screens against the Utah Jazz. The Hornets just did. The Celtics just did.
Yo, shout out to my Charlotte Hornets, who are coming on strong.
They are. They look great.
Six of their last seven, or what's it? I don't know what it's up to now, but shout out to them.
Big win. First of all, it's all Isaiah Thomas. I mean, just
I'm happy for them, man. I really am.
The correlation there. It's incredible. Yeah.
It's all Miles Plumlee shooting with his other hand from the free throw.
That has not hurt. That has not hurt. But, like, look, like, I think Quinn Snyder is definitely not the problem in Utah.
Agreed.
He's a victim of a roster that is, it's like the best offensive players on it are one-dimensional. And they've struggled for years to piece together enough two-way contribution. Gobert not being able to create his own shot is kind of like just this unanswerable dilemma when you get into the playoffs and teams are switching guards onto him and he can't do anything with the ball. And that's just, it's tough. I mean, in the regular season, all like when he dives in, he puts defenses in rotation. He's a great pick and roll screener with Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell. But like, if you're switching that action, it's just a lot harder to score on. So I don't, yeah, I don't blame Quinn Snyder's offensive system, his defensive system. I think if he were to hit the market, I mean, I think he's like one of the five best coaches year in, year out. No one talks about him. He's incredible.
This is a great point. He's maxed out that roster. And you're right. I'm part of the problem. He doesn't get enough credit, man. He doesn't. He's done a hell of a job there. And it's not even that they played the same way. Like, was it last year or the year before that he was kind of, I think, the genesis for them becoming the three-point shooting team that they've become? And he's shown a willingness to be nimble with that team, too. I think he's done a fantastic job of maxing out that group.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it's a fun thought exercise. Like, do you think, I haven't really thought about this, but like and I don't want to say anything to disparage like Frank Vogel, who's fine and just won a championship, but like Lakers fans are pretty thirsty for Quinn Snyder right now. They think he's the answer to all their problems. I do wonder Donovan Mitchell's usage is really high. So it's not like this is just this egalitarian offense or anything like that. But I do wonder, Quinn Snyder coaching LeBron and AD and Westbrook, if he could have any, just what that would look like, if it would look anything different. I don't know. But
To me, the Lakers thing, again, let's not disparage Vogel. I mean, we could talk until our faces are blue about, oh, what strategic thing could you do with this group? But, like, coaching the Lakers also comes with managing up. It comes with managing the egos on the roster. There's a lot that's gone into this season for Frank Vogel beyond just a roster that makes absolutely no sense. Mm-hmm. Unless Quinn Snyder is somehow also is able to convince Russell Westbrook to come off the bench, which Frank Vogel has not been able to do, apparently, allegedly, then, you know, I think that team could be interesting with different coaches, but not necessarily better. And it doesn't necessarily change what's been their biggest problem.
Absolutely. So, in short, Quinn Snyder, amazing. If they fail, you shouldn't fire him. Like, that would just be, it's one of those things that is so predictable. You see it a mile coming in the NBA where it's so hard to trade Rudy Gobert. You can't trade Donovan Mitchell. How else are you going to upgrade this roster? So what you do is...
Do you think it's that hard to trade Rudy?
I mean, I've thought about hypothetical, like, destinations for him. And it's like, okay, does he go to... Does like, a team like the Hornets? Are they interested?
I was just going to say Charlotte. I think Charlotte... I mean, what if Miles Bridges sign and trade? Maybe they throw in one more player and you kind of mix up the vibe and could be interesting. I don't know if they'd be better, but it could be interesting.
It would. It's like Gobert is just the center of not only their defense, but their offense. Like he is pick and roll team.
It might lower their floor, but it could also weirdly raise their ceiling.
I would need an all-star if I'm trading Rudy Gobert. That's what I would need.
That's fair.
Because you got to keep Donovan Mitchell. That's like the number one focus of the organization beyond actually winning the championship and keeping him happy. So I don't know what you do there. And so I just hope that they don't think that they can solve their problems by firing Quinn Snyder and getting a new coach because he's great.
I do think they are headed towards some kind of change this offseason, though.
They're fifth in the standings right now with if the season were to end today, first round matchup against the Dallas Mavericks, not with home court, no home court advantage. That's tough.
This whole season was all about how deep the Eastern Conference is. And now I'm looking at the West, like there's no joke in these top seven or eight teams here in the West either. Top seven. Yeah.
Okay, let's go to this fun question from Andy, who writes, "Hello, Open Floor team, Michael, Rohan, and Chris." Andy from Melbourne. I always screw up pronouncing this city. I'm so sorry. Is it Melbourne? That's what people in Australia say. Melbourne.
I didn't realize you were like studying abroad down under, you know? You didn't realize you had a dinner reservations at Outback Steakhouse tonight. Okay.
We need Andy, you gotta email us back in with the correct pronunciation.
That would be nice, because I've always known it as Melbourne, but you know, that's how they say it when I watch cricket.
Yeah, but, Melbourne, you know, Australia, here. I hope I'm not making a fool of myself. Anyway, Andy continues. I'm 45 years old.
I think you should read the question in an Australian accent.
I don't think I'm going to do that. Andy writes in, "I'm 45 years old, and my love of the NBA started toward the end of the Magic Lakers and Larry Bird Celtics era and the start of Michael Jordan's dominance. This was the first time...
when the NBA started.
It's truly disrespectful. This was the first time that NBA basketball started to be shown on regular TV on Australia. There was one game per week replayed at 10 p.m. on a Friday night. I've watched the league for a long time, and my question is, are the 2004 Detroit Pistons the greatest, quote, team of all time and the best example of a, quote, team beating a collection of superstars? By greatest team, I mean, is there a better example of basketball players coming together to be greater than the sum of their parts? Also, can you think of a better team with less superstars than this Pistons team? Cheers and keep up the fantastic work. The playoffs are going to be amazing this year." Andy, thank you so much. Wonderful email. So I had one team that came to mind that I think is better than that Pistons team that also had no, quote, superstars on it, and everyone fell into the right groove, and it was all perfect. And my answer is the 2014 San Antonio Spurs. Mm-hmm. They won 62 games that year, and then they won the championship. They finished first in net rating, fifth in offensive rating, fourth in defensive rating. They had no players on their team who finished in the top 30 in win shares. And by contrast, the Phoenix Suns this year have four players in the top 20 in win shares. Nobody on that Spurs team averaged over 30 minutes a game. Nobody averaged over 17 points per game. Their only all-star was 31-year-old Tony Parker. So, yeah. And they were just a juggernaut.
I mean, they were nuts.
Some of the most beautiful basketball I've ever seen.
They had... It's funny because they have so many Hall of Famers on that team, but obviously in points of their career where they're not playing Hall of Fame-level basketball. I will say, Tony Parker gets a little bit forgotten from that time. I mean, there were moments during the 2013 finals, he was the best player on the floor. He had fantastic playoffs that year. And he wasn't quite as good in 2014. The collective was a little stronger that year. But yes, I think the 14 Spurs, I think, run away with this one. It's a little bit different than the Pistons because even those Pistons guys at their heights were not as good as the heights we've seen the players on that Spurs team play. Mm-hmm. Duncan's obviously one of the best players of all time. Kawhi, when healthy, is one of the best.
He was 37. Duncan was 37.
Exactly.
That year. Yeah.
So, this team is right on the fence to me, but the 2011 Mavs, I think you could shoehorn them into this conversation. You had Dirk, obviously, who was fantastic and a killer in those playoffs, an absolute assassin. Wasn't he perfect from the free throw line in the finals or something like that? There's the level of focus he had, but it was still, that was 4 years post MVP Dirk. It wasn't him at the absolute height of his powers. And everyone else on that team was, like you said, a guy who just fit perfectly into their role. So that's really the only other team that came to mind. But I think the 14 Spurs are definitely the team in this conversation.
I had the 2011 Mavericks penciled in as my answer to this question. I think they're a solid response. And then I went back and I looked at Dirk's on-off numbers in both the regular season and the playoffs. And the Mavericks just disintegrated when Dirk was not on the court. So I can't quite he was still a super-duper star.
He was obviously a mess. I mean, but it was also like the drop. The thing with that team is more about just, I think he was a notch or two below peak Dirk. I mean, it wasn't peak Dirk. I think we can agree on that. Mm-hmm. And the thing about that team is just the gap between, it's kind of like this year's Nuggets almost. It was more about the gap between Dirk and everyone else, where it was like they didn't have a second banana. I mean, obviously Jason Terry was such a good player on that team. It's not like they didn't have good players. They just had guys who they really perfectly fit around Dirk. It's not quite the 2014 Spurs, but it was still a unique roster construction.
Yeah, I mean, you had obviously Tyson Chandler like reinventing verticality. Mm-hmm. You had
Jason Kidd,
Sean Marion, Deshaun Stevenson, Brian Cardinal, just a legendary, the janitor.
Yeah.
Legendary team. Everybody fit in. Truly like championship team in the sense. So yeah, definitely an acceptable.
Yeah.
100%. Okay, let's go to another email here from frequent emailer Rohan.
This is getting out of hand, and this one was particularly bullshit.
Love it. Rohan writes in, is Monty Williams as coach of the year already settled? Why shouldn't Ime Udoka win it? The Celtics were a 500 team last season with, quote, terrible vibes. Start of the season, much the same, and no championship aspirations. There were calls to break up the Jays. A few months later, they're one of the best teams in the league and genuine title contenders. They play suffocating defense. And while they might not be the 2014 Spurs, the ball moves on offense, too. Teams with bad vibes don't do those things. See the Knicks. Every young player on the team has improved, and Al Horford looks not washed anymore. Has any team in NBA history improved its play and identity this much during a season without adding a superstar? That's entirely on the newly installed coach, right? Thank you, Rohan. Wonderful email. I mean, I don't want to get in too much on, like, is this the greatest turnaround ever?
Heat went from 11-30 to 30-11 with Deion Waiters and Goran Dragic in the backcourt.
That's true. They didn't make the playoffs, though.
They lost a tiebreaker. Okay, whatever. That's still a bigger and more dramatic turnaround.
Sure. So
can you guess who started a power forward for that team?
James Johnson?
Nope.
Haslam?
Nope.
Can you give me a hint?
He is a shooter, is how I would describe him.
Sweet. Ryan Anderson?
No, but you're in the right vein. It's Luke Babbitt. He was technically James Johnson, but Luke Babbitt was starting games for that team.
I could be right with James Johnson? Is that what I heard?
In terms of, like, I guess they were interchangeable forwards okay. wise, you know what I mean?
What I wanted to do with this question is more just talk about Coach of the Year.
Don't think Ime is going to win?
Go ahead.
And this is not because he has not done a fantastic job. We've talked about – I was an earlier adopter of this year's Celtics team than you were, okay?
You like to say that a lot.
I was – check the text. They will all be released at the end of the season.
Here's the deal, Rohan. You have no credibility when you say things, though. No one knows when it's a bit. No one knows when you're dead serious. It's too tough to parse.
It was very obvious that was not a bit. I was tweeting about the scene before you were. But he also bears responsibility for that slow start. You know what I mean? It's like we're giving him credit for the fact that they weren't doing a good job to start the first 50 games of the season. That seems a little silly to me. That it's like, he's going to win Coach of the Year because it took him 50 games to figure it out, and now they've been so good, which I think is a little bit unfair to the teams that – I mean, listen, we're also both – I mean, we put Tatum as a top 10 player this year. Jaylen Brown's at the very least a top 30 player. It's not like he's doing this with a team that we didn't think was really talented. I mean, obviously they don't have a ton of depth. And like I said, he's done a great job, but I just think there are teams that over the course of the season came in with even worse expectations – worse rosters, and over the course of the year have been more consistent. And that matters to me for this award.
Yeah, I mean, in my top three, Ime is not on it. I'll just give my – I have so many honorable mentions. And then I want to actually, after we give our top threes, I want to list and ask you for, like, who the worst coaches are, because I think that's actually a more interesting question because there's so many great coaches in the league right now. Honorable mentions, Ime Udoka, Chris Finch, Billy Donovan, Doc Rivers, Ty Lue, Jason Kidd, JB Bickerstaff. The list goes on and on and on. A lot of really wonderful coaching jobs this year. My number three for Coach of the Year is, and he was my number one 2 weeks ago, or probably a week ago, is Eric Spoelstra. Really nothing else to say about him. I think he's the best coach, bar none, in the league. He's the only coach who is the face of a franchise except Pop, and Pop's about to retire within the next 2 years, maybe. Hopefully not, but he's going to retire someday soon. And Eric Spoelstra will be the only player, the only coach who is he's the identity, the face of a franchise, and you have to be a truly great coach to have that be said about you. And he's probably not even in the back half of his career, which is remarkable. Has two titles, coached in multiple finals, five finals, two and three in the finals. Like,
yeah.
He was certified as a top 15 coach of all time earlier this year. And he's just so inventive, so motivational, so bold. How many coaches can throw a clipboard at their best player and true. Like get away with it?
I mean, and at the end of the day, they still have a chance to finish first. They had a ton of guys miss time. That's interesting. I don't know that Spo's in my top three, but I appreciate you throwing me a bone with that one. But I think he has to be. He's in that honorable mention mix at the very least. All right, I'll let you give the rest of your top three.
No, who's your third?
I think my third is still Billy Donovan.
Okay, what's the case?
I mean, listen, they've backslid here for a bit, but it's hard to separate, right? I mean, DeRozan's obviously had this monster season, so it's like, who do you give the credit to? But at the end of the day, I mean, Lonzo is still out. They missed Caruso for a ton of time. LaVine missed a ton of time. And then now he's, even though he's playing again, he's not 100%. Pat Williams has missed a bunch of time. You look at the season they've had from guys like Dosunmu, Kobe White. I think Donovan deserves some credit for keeping that ship steady. And at the end of the day, I mean, some people thought this team might not even make the playoffs. They mm-hmm. are probably going to finish fifth or sixth, but I just think that he's done a hell of a job. I mean, the fact that they are, if you told me before the season a number of games guys like Williams, Caruso, and LaVine were going to miss, and they'd still be where they are, I'd be like, how? Mm-hmm. And obviously DeRozan deserves a ton of credit for that, but I just think, Donovan's done a fantastic job.
Yeah, I can't quibble too much with that. He's just in the group just below my top three, I think.
Mm-hmm. Another honorable mention, can I throw a name in the ring real quick?
Sure.
Just Jason Kidd, what he's done for that Mavs, you know, I think he's
absolutely
kind of helped figure out their defensive issues. And
yep.
I mean, they're up to four right now, so shout out to Jay Kidd.
Definitely. Many thought that he was going to be a total disaster, and also that this team's roster was built for offense, and for him to establish a defensive identity is truly remarkable. So my number two is, I think, going to be the person who wins, like, running away.
I think we have the same number two.
Yeah, and honestly, it's Monty Williams.
Same.
And honestly, like,
no qualms with him winning.
Of course not. Absolutely not. I think that the case for him is that losing in the finals and then coming back with basically the same core, I think people just assume that that's an easy layup to be better than you were. It's really not. It's an incredible challenge. And mm-hmm. for him to keep everyone motivated, they've been the best team basically since like the first week when they went. They started one and three or something like that.
I told you this when we were talking about all NBA. I think they would have won 70 games if CP never got hurt.
It's possible.
And even without him, frankly, they're 9-1 in their last 10 games. Chris Paul's only been available for two of them.
Mm-hmm.
They were great without him too. I mean, they missed Ayton for a ton of time. I think the fact that they played so well without Chris Paul, I think they were second or third in net rating over that time, speaks a lot to, let me use this word genuinely now, the culture Monty Williams has helped institute there along with CP. But yeah, they just kept rolling, man. I really hope they make the finals again. They're also such a fun team to play. The way they execute down the stretch, yeah, man. There's nothing left to be said. I mean, they're far and away the best team in the league this season.
One of the best crunch time teams ever.
Yeah.
Like, literally. How they execute. They'll out-execute you. They don't beat themselves. Super discipline when CP goes down, it's the next man up mentality. Cam Johnson's development in his role. A lot of stuff that you can just say, wow, like shout out to Monty Williams. So I think he's been tremendous. Like, and a lot of people thought he should have won last year. He didn't. Tom Thibodeau won. If I had a vote last year, I probably would have voted for Tibbs, because anyone that takes the Knicks to a fourth seed is like, I mean, you're basically not a human being anymore. You've transcended our species. So, but this is a plenty deserving campaign for Monty, and he'll probably win. Who was your number one, Rohan?
I have to imagine we have the same one, but I'm going with Taylor Jenkins in Memphis.
Yes, sick beard. I also just have an incredible Taylor Jenkins.
Beard. Incredible, I mean, beard. Let's just talk about, forget about how, I mean, they're up to second in the West now. Forget about what they've done this season as a whole. Just how well they've played without Ja Morant has been crazy. Dylan Brooks has missed a ton of time. Like, obviously the season is so much has been about Jaw's explosion, but yeah, he's missed what, 16, 17, 18 games now around there. Dylan Brooks out for so much of the season. Like, yeah, man, they've been fantastic. I would assume he would run away with it, but I do think Monty's going to win, and I love both those guys, and they both have great seasons, but I think it's got to be Taylor Jenkins.
Yeah, I also had Taylor Jenkins. No one expected the Memphis Grizzlies to be this good, and I wrote this story about Ja Morant, went down to Memphis, and in reporting it, you talk about, you know, you're just interviewing players on the team, and Taylor Jenkins' name comes up during interviews and conversations about the reasons for their success, and the players there just, like, adore Taylor Jenkins, and he has a rapport with everyone on his team. He listens to what they have to say. He incorporates it into schemes. He has trust in his players. They trust him. And he's also just like a brilliant basketball mind. And so there's really no, like, the success. There's so, like, to let a team like that embrace the mentality that they've had of just, like, you know, talking mess to everyone, rolling through, being super confident, having a swagger. Like, some coaches, honestly, like, I don't know if every coach would allow that to happen the way that it has. And Taylor Jenkins is just like, this is the team. This is our identity. This is how we play. Like, fine with it. So
to that effect, I will say shout out to Monty Williams. Like, you know, the Suns dancing to Nevada before that game against the Blazers was like one of the best moments of the NBA season. And yeah, Monty's just chilling. I love that. I think it's great when coaches let teams lean into their personalities naturally.
Yeah. So I did not have this on the outline for you, Rohan, but there's, you know, there's been some less than great coaching performances this season. Do any particular names pop out to you? Like, I know I named like half of the league or more in my honorable mentions.
I think the story is more that there's good coaches around the league. I just think when you look at the teams that are bad this season, it's all teams that were supposed to be bad, frankly.
There's a couple there who have been disappointing.
The Pacers, I think, should be a little higher in the standings. I don't think Tibbs has done a great job with the Knicks this year. I think it's fair to say Nate McMillan has not.
You think banishing Kemba Walker and just not playing Cam Reddish when your front office trades a first round pick to get him? You think those were bad coaching decisions?
I guess it's hard for me to say that Tibbs is a bad coach overall, but he's not had his best season. Let me put it that way. I don't think
it's been a nightmare.
Yeah, I don't think Nate McMillan's had his best season, or nor is Rick Carlisle. But I don't think they're all. I think they all have proven that they can be good coaches as well. But mm-hmm. Tibbs especially has not had his best season.
I think that Frank Vogel honestly was in a very difficult position for a lot of reasons. I think if the Lakers gave him more guaranteed money and the contract that he deserves, having come off a championship in 2020, the same type of contract that Coach Bud got when he won the title, that Frank Vogel would have had maybe, this is just me speaking as an outsider looking in, I think Frank Vogel could have had a little bit more cachet in.
Might be a little easier to put Russell Westbrook on the bench.
Exactly. And telling Anthony Davis, hey, guess what? You're our starting center. Sorry. Like, I'm not playing DeAndre Jordan minutes tonight. Yeah. Like, that's so I'm not playing Dwight Howard with you. So I think that you know, some of those last decisions that he said.
Yeah, it's not been great, but Vogel's not on my list. They put him in the worst spot you could put a coach with. A team full of egos, a roster that makes no sense, no contract, and a win-now mandate. Like, it's hard to be in a worse position as a head coach than he's been in this season.
Yeah, so did you mention Nate McMillan?
Yes, I think that he's not had the Hawks up to the standard they probably should be this year. I mean, I think they now are finally at 500, but I do also think their success last year maybe raised the expectations a little bit too high, but I think they should be better than 500.
It's a good thing that we didn't put any of their players on the cover of our magazine coming into the season. Even though I will say that, did you know right now Trae Young leads all players in total points and total assists? Pretty amazing for, just a otherwise totally disappointing tire fire of the season from the Atlanta Hawks.
Unlike Chris Paul's Phoenix Suns, who lead the entire league in wins. So, you know.
So the other coach that I want to mention here, I don't think he's a bad coach at all. Steve Nash, just because... It just seems like there's no accountability in Brooklyn. And I put some of that... Some of that's not on the head coach. Some of that's on players to police themselves.
Well, did Kyrie say he was one of the head coaches? Some nights Durant was going to be the head coach, too.
That's kind of what I'm talking about. of course, Kyrie Irving coming back to Brooklyn yesterday in a loss to the Hornets was, of course, bigger than basketball, as Kyrie said after the game. It just utter ridiculousness. But I will say, I don't know if Nash navigated this. I think it's, super difficult season for them.
Come on, you talk about curveballs getting thrown at you. One player quits the team, and that's somehow not even the worst thing that you've had to deal with because the other guy is only playing half the games.
And, you know, again, not his fault, but, the day
Durant
before the trade.
All that time. Yeah.
Sure, but, I'm kind of picking nits here, and I have a more serious or larger bone to pick in a second, but, the day before the trade deadline being we are not trading James Harden. And it's just okay, man. I just don't know. And there's reports about players not really feeling his rotations in the fourth quarter. And how much did he contribute to and not holding Kyrie accountable? How much did that contribute to James Harden kind of falling out of step with Brooklyn? Who knows? Maybe that it has nothing to do with anything. But I'm also just why didn't Bruce Brown play earlier this season? That's just
that
a question.
That was strange, especially after how good he was during the playoffs. That was a weird.
And now he's
early
killing it.
That
was incredible. Yeah. It's what's going on here? So those are just some. Look, I think it speaks more to the general head coach population than anything wrong Steve Nash did to put him in this kind of category, but. Mm-hmm. He just popped into my head as someone who I think deserves mention when we talk about some of the more questionable coaching campaigns.
For the record, I don't think that he does, but I understand where you're coming from.
Wonderful. Rohan, I think that's going to do it for today's show. We made it to the end. The devil has not come for either
of us. We're still
riding.
We're riding
so far
through in the middle right now.
Exactly. Thank you so much for your wonderful insight. Thank you so much to our fantastic listeners. Please keep the emails coming. openfloormail@gmail.com, openfloormail@gmail.com. Everyone, please stay safe. Everyone, please continue to enjoy the NBA season.
There we go. Hold on, let's start recording. I've been low-key sick all day, and I really thought I was going to...